Hi, and welcome to another edition of Amana Podcast. Amana is a collective of people, places, things, and actions that transcend us. Exploring and living through your higher virtues and what takes you off track from them and how do you get back on. And today it gives me a great pleasure to introduce a friend, Peter Bort. Say good day, Peter.
Good day, mate.
So Peter and I have probably known each other, well, I'm guessing, but probably you could know it better, but I'm going to say somewhere between 20 and 15 years ago I first met you, Peter.
Oh, I believe that's correct.
Yeah. And so, Peter, why don't, without asking, I'm going to ask a broad question to you. So you can go personal or professional or somewhere in between. What are your virtues and what leads your life and what takes you off track and what's been happening for you?
Well, in the present, the virtue I'm connected with very much these days is connection. And what I mean by that is that I am connecting to my true nature. I'm being guided by, you know, the kind of higher forces in my life more and more, that kind of connection. I'm listening to other people. I'm actively cultivating listening because the benefits are just incredible, that it pays off. So that's the connection with others. And most recently, in my health journey, I've learned how to connect to the sun and to nature in a way that's scientifically demonstrating to me how incredibly valuable it is.
Yeah, beautiful. There's something very organic about that, right? Like I've attuned back to my, as I've mentioned in other podcasts, my cook's garden, and I have a lime tree in front of me and an apple tree, and just, you know, I'm cooking from my garden is just very healing, and obviously the sun does so much for us. Let's jump back into connection there for a moment as a virtue. So what are some of the ways, and you did mention them, like listening, for example, but I can give you a funny antidote to that. I went on a, let's call it a blind date the other week, and I listened to this person intently, and she didn't think I liked her. So maybe listening's not always just the only thing that's necessary here.
Well, you have to wonder what it was she was seeing in you that mirrored about herself.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll give her your number to give her some counseling.
Yeah, listening, we're in a culture that, you know, has people not listening to each other on policy issues and on things that are so important to them, and yet they're not listening. And so we're the human organism. And if my liver doesn't listen to my brain, my body's not healthy. And if I'm not listening to people who have different views about vaccination than I do, I'm not part of a whole organism. So it's really, you know, there's a virtue of respect. I would tell you respect is part of this as well. Mm. Cooperation, you know, just cooperating with what's present with another person. Not that they're wrong, not that I'm righteous. Just tell me more about that.
It's interesting, people's viewpoints, that's for sure. It's and they seem to be polarized and quite strong at this time. And I think, you know, the thing that I attune to too is, and this is my personal belief, folks, is that I came to this country for one of the big reasons is freedom of choice. You know, we're forced to vote in Australia. And I'll tell people, you know, I don't remember ever voting in the US. I love the option not to vote. It's not impinged or forced upon me.
It makes the vote more valuable if you're choosing to cast it.
Yes, exactly. And if I do choose to cast it, it means I'm putting a ton of energy and intent into it. It's not just for the reason to vote.
Yes.
Having said all that, you have a law background, and I'm curious to know how some of these virtues play out in those environments, because the law, man's law, if you will, seems to do a lot of polarizing. It is looking for the wrong right separation, if you will. Very black and white, I find it. Although there is a lot of gray that the lawyers seem to find.
Yes, of course. You know, my spiritual teacher, a guy that I think you're familiar with, is maybe yours as well. Yeah. He used to talk about in the areas of education, law, medicine, maybe another, these were testers of us. These would really test our mettle. And to me, I look at it as if Earth is a school, by going into law, I just chose a tough curriculum for a career. You know, one where I could really find out what I'm made of and graduate into being really helpful, bringing value to others in their situations. And I found my way into a niche that is much less involved with the right-wrong aspect of man's law and much more honoring collaboration between people. So we have this collaborative process for solving families, you know, what they need to transact around divorcing or their kids. And it's a very intentional, team-based, holistic approach. So it really leaves the right and wrong piece in the dust most of the time.
Nice. Yeah, the family law, as I understand it, particularly in California, is one of the areas of law that has a lot of gray matter. And maybe that gives you some latitude. Do you have any stories, Peter, of how you've worked some of your values into that, you know, without mentioning names, so to speak, but a good antidote is always a good way to understand things.
Let's see if one comes to mind. So, you know, this maybe fits more into the just kind of the rough state that a courthouse and that aspect of law is. So I remember meeting with a client. We were going to be going into a courtroom. She would be essentially confronting her partner who had been very physically abusive of her. Mm-hmm. And it was more about just preparing her energetically to be in that space. And the metaphor that came present for me to share with her is, you know, do you remember Glenda the Good Witch in The Wizard of Oz? And she just kind of would float in, surrounded by this beautiful crystalline bubble of white light. Can we make that for you now? Can you bring that forward for yourself? And then when we walk in that courtroom, nothing's going to stick to you. It's all the bad stuff's just going to bounce off. You're protected. And I remember that it was empowering for me to step outside of the little attorney box and share something like that with her. And she shared with me, you know, during and after, that it was really effective for her and made her kind of have a shift about how she was seeing how she could navigate her life. So there's that. And the other one that came to mind is also around courthouses. And it was November 1st, the day after Halloween. I'm going through the metal detectors with my client. So, you know, they want to find out what's inside purses and things. And so they're pulling out of her handbag furry handcuffs. And she'd been to a Halloween party the night before. Now, those sheriff's deputies, they reminded me of that, you know, for months afterwards. And just another way to kind of bring light into a tough place.
Yeah, that's great. Talking of this, let's look at, because no doubt you exercise both sides of this, and the distinction, if you could make a distinction for our listeners between man's law and spiritual law, and how you understand that and how you may play into that or navigate through it, maybe a better way of thinking about it.
Yes. So I think, again, the metaphor of school and curriculum is helpful to appreciate this, and just that there, you know, it's been set up by some higher power that we have the optimal learning opportunities. And so, for instance, it may have been against the law for Gandhi to motivate people not to work and to not participate in the British colonial mechanism at the time of, I believe it were the salt protests, something to do with the commodity salt being very valuable. So he was breaking man's law, and he was encouraging others to break man's law. And yet, look what was coming through him, just a pure higher law that eventually transferred into a new nation and transferred into a lot of determination, self-determination and freedom for a big mass of humanity. So I think there's a place in our curriculum where, and I'll speak for myself, where I'm shown ways of making choices, and there is a higher law present. And at the same time, you know, the speed limits are up there for a reason. And, you know, if I want to go $120 on the freeway, you know, that might not be the wisest choice. And whatever voice I'm listening to that tells me that's, you know, a higher law, I might want to give that voice a second listen before acting on it.
And good examples, and I who popped into my mind too, as you mentioned, is like a Martin Luther King, right? Like he's breaking old patterns, I guess, or old laws of the past, and bringing a greater freedom and connectedness. If we go back to connection, yes, of who we are as a humanity, do you see anyone, or are you experiencing anyone doing that at this time for yourself, or how are you doing it at this time for yourself?
I have chosen to surround myself with amazing people, as I know you have, Mark.
Yeah.
And I see examples every day. And, you know, everybody's kind of waiting for the next world savior to show up. I'm not, you know, I see that. I'm connected to that world savior in you and in all these really majestic souls that I'm connecting with. And so I'm open, you know, I'm open for the next world savior, the you know, avatar example of what we're talking about. And I'm also open to this kind of, they talk about the Aquarian age being an age where it's about cooperation, collaboration, groups coming together to shift into a new consciousness. So maybe in my vision, it's something more like the group becoming that.
Yeah, I'm at least seeing it that this way at that time. You know, there's a collective that is going for something greater. You know, I can kind of poo-poo the pseudo yogis or the pseudo spiritualists out there, but there is movement in the right direction, if you will.
My goodness, just the language that people use. So, you know, celebrities, people that are in the corporate world, they're saying, you know, love and light to you.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if I look back 20 years and to be in a corporate setting and somebody says, you know, let's send light to so-and-so. Yeah. I mean, things are shifting.
Yeah. 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 No, I totally agree. And let's jump into some of the things that we had mentioned earlier too, around perhaps your health and the way that you've navigated with your health. And let's, you know, tie that back into connectedness or the way that you're working with it.
This is really present for me, Mark, and it's become my greatest, if a virtue is a discipline, if a virtue is something that calls forward who someone truly is, for me, this way that I've been relating with nature is that kind of experience for me. And you could call it mindfulness. So we have circadian rhythms and ultradian rhythms. So circadian is kind of like the daily 24-hour clock in our body, and clocks, actually, it's a lot of clocks. And ultradian refers to the seasons. And so when I go out, my day starts with going out of my house and being in sun without any lenses on my eyes, no contact lenses, no eyeglasses, certainly no sunglasses. And I am letting my eyes experience the sun. And by doing that, you know, our optical mechanism is only partially involved with making pictures on the back of our retina. A big chunk of that fiber optic cable is delivering messages into our hypothalamus, into our glandular system, into our fascia, and it's telling the body, here's what the sun is doing on this day, and here's how we as a body can cooperate. And so by being in that early morning sunlight, I am resetting for all of that to work perfectly. And, you know, my day continues with an hour and a half walk in nature. So I do a 5-mile walk in nature, and I don't have eyeglasses on the whole time. And one of the side benefits from this is my eyeglass prescription for nearsightedness has gone down 3 different times by my optician just in the last 3 years.
Interesting.
So it's then it's getting in the sun directly, direct sun, without, again, without sunglasses. Sunglasses are the Diet Coke of eyewear. Okay. they're taking from our sunlight what we most need. So I don't wear sunglasses at all. And my first couple of days without them in strong sun, I was blinking, and then I just got over it, like all of us who do this find. And so now I'm in the sunset. I'm outside the same way in the sunset, at least for a few minutes. Again, attuning my body temple to light. So this approach in for my body and nature is light, water, and magnetism. And the light part also consists of something that, you know, we're hearing more and more about is don't be on screens and don't be under bright lights, you know, whatever period of time before you go to sleep. Maybe it's 2 hours, whatever it might be. But there's incredible wisdom to that, because when I get in a very bright LED lit room, or I'm watching a very bright TV screen and the sun's already set, I'm resetting my body clock as though it's high noon in my body. So now how can I expect my body to go to sleep a few minutes after that? Not at high noon. We're not wired for that. Another thing I've learned is to eat in tune with the light as far as taking in food. So my biggest meal of the day is breakfast. So eat breakfast like a king, lunch like a prince, and dinner like a pauper. And we talk about this because we don't want to give our body the job of digesting food after the sun sets. Because if we do, the body's now multitasking in a way it's not designed to do. And I don't know about you, but if I go to bed and I've got food in my stomach, that's not a restful night for me. And so that's been one of my disciplines. And as part of this, and if we talk about where I started and where I am now, where I started over 3 years ago was with 25 pounds more on my body. 25 pounds that I didn't like looking at in the mirror.
Yes.
And that has stayed off. And it's really about my light diet as opposed to any kind of change in caloric. So the caloric, you know, is a linear approach. It says, take in less calories, put out more calories with exercise, and you will lose weight. And I'm sure that works for lots of people. And it's linear. This approach I'm talking about is nonlinear, and for me, much more effective, which is just to get my light correct and to source energy. Here's a crazy thing. There's a professor at the University of Washington who discovered what's called the fourth phase of water. Okay. Mm. So this is a pretty big deal. Okay. And one of his conclusions is that we're meant to source 2/3 of our biologic energy, the energy that makes our bodies work, not from food. We're meant to source 1/3 of it from sun in our eyes and on our bare skin. And we're meant to source 1/3 of it from the free electrons that come up from the earth when we're barefoot on the ground. So I actually spend a lot of time barefoot on my property, getting those free electrons. And so he also, this is Dr. Gerald Pollack, who has a great TED talk on this. He also, you know, talks about how this is so important in terms of these little organelles in our cells called mitochondria. Now, our mitochondria, you could think of as the batteries in our body that are our power cells. And as we age, the batteries start to wear out. Well, the cool thing about this particular way of relating with nature is that the mitochondria get fired up again and work a lot better. So now I'm in a situation where over 3 years ago, I was heading toward age 60. I was starting to get mental fog, which I just attributed to that's what happens when you hit your 60s. I was starting to procrastinate work stuff. I was having bad moods. And my blood work, like for testosterone levels, the testosterone levels were going down. Mm-hmm. My C-reactive protein, which is an indicator of inflammation in the body, was going up. Extra weight is usually I shouldn't say this authoritatively, but for me, it was indicative that I had inflammation in my body that I didn't need. So now, you know, step up to the present moment, and here I am with much higher testosterone levels than 3.5 years ago, almost no C-reactive protein, that inflammatory indicator, and I don't take any B supplement or D, vitamin D3 supplement. I make it all in my eyes, on my skin, from the sun. So that's a really long kind of rant, Mark. So I'll take a pause.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I'm sure our listeners do too, in terms of the detail you're going into here, because I just did a podcast with Terry Tillman, who I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yeah, I love Terry.
And we were talking about specifically the wilderness experience that he's conducted over the years, and you know, my participation a couple of times out there, and that's almost what you're talking about. It's almost impinged upon you because you truly are a wilderness. I mean, there is no digital anything out there, out in the Sawtooth Mountains, and you know, you're staying where there's bears and nature and everything else, and you're getting up when the sun gets up because that's the natural clock. And I noticed after nine days, you know, you start to move into this rhythm that is, I don't want to say just natural with the natural world, but I found my body coming into a happier state, you know. Yes. Because I'm not caught just in my, you know, at a computer mentalizing stuff all day and overbalanced in that form. And that certainly my work over the years, I've tried to balance it out with some athletics, but I tend to be at a seat talking a lot or on a computer a lot.
And that happier you're talking about, that's measurable. That's your dopamine. So when you're getting that early morning sunlight and you're in cooperation with the Sawtooth Mountain biorhythm, that's going to elevate your dopamine, the happy chemical levels. And we're in a digital world and a world where so many addictive substances are so much more available.
Yeah.
And everybody's chasing a dopamine release. They want to release from their stores dopamine, whether it's from drugs or sex addiction or even, you know, chocolate will give you a little bit of a dopamine release. But the whole point is we don't have an infinite store of dopamine that we can just keep release. And the digital devices are designed, you know, the way the Instagrams and Facebooks and such are designed, they're designed to work around dopamine releases. And so all we're doing is depleting dopamine And, you know, if I get out and I do my nature thing, my dopamine stores that I'm starting out with are so much higher. So you're totally onto it with the happier.
Forgive me if I've forgotten here, but have you done DSS or completed DSS?
I was given the opportunity to facilitate DSS for about 15 years. And so I've been in the DSS construct for a really long time, and I'm currently working on the deliverable that they call a practical treatise. And I have 10 people who are currently doing an individual survey where they are for 33 days. They're getting up. They're seeing the earliest morning light, the sunrise light, for a few minutes, and they're going to bed before 11 p.m., but ideally 10 p.m. so they get a full night's sleep. And we're in the middle of that 33 days so far, and so far I hear good things from them.
Great. So just for our listeners, DSS stands for the Doctorate of Spiritual Science. It's through a college called Peace Theological College and Philosophy. And one of the big components of that, as you're saying, the 33-day cycle, is around tracking. And you'll track a lot of different things or different areas of your life. I guess to, one, become more aware and awake of the impact and the cause and effect of certain areas. So from, as you're saying, getting up and hitting the early light with your body, taking in vitamin D to, I mean, I got into it where you're peeing on the strip each morning, looking at your pH balances.
Yes.
And, you know, am I over acid or am I alkaline, and how much lemon water do I have to drink, and or things that will support my body into moving into a more alkaline state, so I'm not festering an environment that disease can more readily live in. Now, once again, folks, I'm no doctor. Peter isn't either, but we've learned these things from a doctorate program that has some good backing behind it. So learning to track and microscopic steps of change has really powerful value over time, and getting the habit pattern over 33 days is where the mind can start to go, okay, I've got a rhythm here. You know, I've got a new consistency that I can lean towards. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to stick. I often think of it like, you know, if I'm overweight and I start running for a marathon the first month or the first 2 weeks, maybe nothing really moves in terms of calories or weight, or it may be transforming into where maybe losing body fat, but muscle is starting to weigh a density. So you've got to give these things time for change. It seems to just happen that way. I think the quick fix that a lot of people propose out there with the big sensational stuff has an impact on people, but is it long-term and is it sustainable? And I found the 33-day approach to changing behavior is really powerful. In fact, my dad wrote a book called Breaking Patterns that dives into a lot of this.
Yes, and he's a great example of how to make life work better, as are you. And I also wanted to, my experience with doing this, we call it kind of a mitochondria or mitochondriac approach or quantum health approach, because the mechanisms in the mitochondria are quantum. They're not explainable by classic physics. So that when I practice these things, the light, water, and the magnetism, I am more alkaline. Okay, I am less acidic. So it's, as you said, it's very microscopic. So it might just be that I'm telling myself, well, I'm going to go out for 5 minutes in the middle of a busy day without my eyeglasses, and I'm going to be in the direct sun. You know, and it can be as small as that, or just, you know, getting my shoes in the grass off, you know, so feet in the grass for a while. And it is microscopic, and that's what pays off the benefits. As you say, the big gigantic campaign of, you know, the Biggest Loser or whatever, that's just not how I roll. And on that point, there's a lot about cold immersion and its benefits.
Yes, and I've been doing it. I don't enjoy it, but I've been doing it.
Well, tell me how that's been for you, Mark.
So Richard LaPlante, who I work with each day, he's a real, I'll just call him a health guru, and probably by being self-experimental, but he leads with breathing and the good effects of different forms of breathing, particularly nasal breathing. So he has a pool that right now is very cold. I couldn't give you the temperature, but if I had to guess, it's low 70s, high 60s, and depending on the day and depending on the sun. We'll jump in. He crawls in. I jump in because I'm too scared to crawl in. And he's like, don't do that. You'll have a heart attack. And I said, well, if it's quick, I'm okay. No, things like that. So we'll jump in and we'll run one length of the pool because it's only 4 feet in depth the whole way through. And then we'll swim without a breath in different patterns. And then when coming back up, we'll do different breathing techniques. And I can tell you, first of all, I like to do it more in the evening because that cold water makes, even though I'll have a hot shower afterwards, it makes me extremely tired. You know, my body must be working in such a way where it just needs to go to sleep, or it can make me extremely hungry. And particularly for the quick fast food, you know, it's, you know, what I mean by fast food is like, you know, cook yourself up real something quick that's probably probably not the best food for you, you know?
Yeah.
Some type of comfort food. So I'm learning. I'm the student of this right now. I can't say that, you know, I'm far from an expert. The other day when we hopped in, I said, I'm done for the season. He said, no, we're just beginning, you know. So he's driving me.
Well, let me lend some encouragement on the science side of what I understand about this. We are actually engineered by our higher power to be made to experience temperature extremes. And so to use the battery metaphor again, if your battery never gets to experience like getting run down some, or if you're always just topping off the battery and it that's going to lead to a shorter battery life. Same thing with your mitochondria. If I'm always in, you know, 60 degrees at night, 72 during the day, my mitochondria are going to wear out quicker. So the cold immersion is an incredible way to build more mitochondria. And we know this because we have something called white adipose tissue, just means white fat. Mm-hmm. And we have brown adipose tissue.
I'm pretty confident I'm carrying white fat.
Well, I'm sure you've got a good mix. And I'm also going to throw out there that as you continue this cold water immersion, you will be building more brown fat. You'll be converting white to brown. You'll be creating greater longevity for yourself. You'll be creating a much better inner pharmacy of the dopamine and the beta endorphins and all the good stuff. And I'm kind of addicted to cold immersion at this point. It makes me feel so good, you know, not the initial, obviously, but the effect of it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I have felt better. I noticed with the breathing techniques, even, you know, my love is golf. So it's helped me with focus. It's helped me feel just better within myself physically on the golf course. And so I do see there's an effect to something that brings me joy most of the time. Thank you for the kind of the back end science, because I'm not holding that information, but it probably is encouraging me to keep it up, you know.
And when you brought up the mouth versus nose breathing, I'm sure, you know, Richard talks about nitric oxide is what you produce more of when you nose breathe. So my hack for this, because I'm not the athlete that you are, Mark, my hack for it is I put a form of surgical tape over my lips when I go to sleep. So I cannot.
That's what he does. Do you know this guy, Richard? And he's been doing it for years. And I said, that's the only time you shut up, you know?
So, I mean, aside from my wife getting a better night's sleep because I'm not snoring, it pays off with huge benefits because the nitric oxide is what delivers the oxygen down deep into the capillaries.
Yeah.
And so you don't have to go to the rehab place and have them hook you up to the fighter pilot.
Yes, I have seen
you know
that.
Balloons. You've ever what's it called? ETTP or whatever
EPP, not EPP. It's for these people. My lame term for it is blood pumping. Yes. ECPP.
Yes, external cardiac something. Yes.
So they have it, and it's a whole machine where it will reverse the blood pumping. So it'll blood pump from the heart as we naturally do, but then from the legs it'll bring it back up. So you recycle, and it starts to take out. My understanding of it is it starts to take out, you know, calciums or let's just say negative things that are in your bloodstream.
Yes, and it's opens helped a lot of people capillaries.
It's helped a lot of people with heart conditions.
Yes, and so now we're opening capillaries. The other thing is that if you look at a red blood cell, it's actually too. It looks too big to fit into our smallest capillaries.
Mm.
And one of the things that when we focus on better magnetism in our body, we create the ability for this hugely electromagnetic organ, our heart, which produces an energy field 22 feet around us. Mm. And that's how big the energy is. But when we are doing the right magnetism, we are creating the ability for better circulation at that same level we're talking about with the nose breathing.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Now, this is what I like is the science that's coming with this. You know, not to say that it worked or not worked. I know, for example, with Richard, he's been doing this for over 40 years just through self experimentation. And it sounds like you've jumped into it. What was your premise for jumping more in this direction?
Yeah. So in my DSS class over 25 years ago, at that point, they would ask you to come up with a focus. You know, mm-hmm. what do you really want to focus on and get out of this, you know, 3, maybe 15 years, you know, of class? And I chose a really long time ago in my 30s, I chose optimal health and vitality. Mm. And I wasn't particularly ill at the time. I didn't have any particular health crisis, but that's what was very clearly on my dashboard. So what showed up many years later, I was in Machu Picchu with my wife. You know, it's at altitude. It's about 8,000 feet up or something like that. And, you know, I'm 59 years old. I'm carrying this extra 25 pounds. And as I was struggling to go up a path, which I thought, this is really interesting that this is a struggle. It doesn't look like it should be. I thought to myself, there has to be a better way. I was imagining was a nonlinear approach, something kind of outside the box. And within a few weeks, I had started to go down this rabbit hole of quantum health. Mm. And I do want to put a plug for something which I have no involvement with financially, but I just think is a good platform for information, which is quantumhealth.tv. It's kind of an odd domain, but the domain is .tv, quantumhealth.tv.
Yeah, I'll put that into our podcast notes for folks.
And there you'll see like you know, snippets, you know, 10-minute interviews with the leaders in this field. And the science is, will just, there's no end to it. It'll just blow your mind.
That's great information. Thank you so much. I do think that there is a movement of change around well-beingness. I think that, you know, we look at our friend Arianna Huffington, who started Thrive Global and Thrive in the corporate world, of how people, and this has been going on for a while, but I just see it becoming more and more of a collective of how people are taking better care of themselves. You know, the 80s Wall Street mentality of burning yourself at both ends is just becoming a negative approach of how to do life. And what's becoming more trending is how do you really take care of yourself, and the science that gets involved with that. So, you know, I know multiple people who take drips every week, you know, vitamin drips, and who are now doing the things that we're talking about, like being in the sun or a cold plunge or moving into infrared saunas or cryo chambers. And this is something back in the day that I've always been somewhat familiar with, being an athlete, you know, all the different tips and tricks that we would try and use to for recovery.
Yes.
Now it's becoming more and more just, you know, how do I optimize who I am from a health magnetic standpoint, you know, and that from a spiritual perspective can give us, it kind of takes away the distraction of the ills, if you will, and it allows you to spend more time in the more beautiful virtues that I enjoy, such as grace and peace and harmony and cooperation and, you know, the things that bring us more joy. So,
yes, I look at where we're going with our approach to health. We're going from a centralized model to a decentralized model. And maybe that fits with the Aquarian age that we're talking about. It's more of this personal responsibility, you know? So it's not just, I'm going to have an appointment with some expert and they're going to fix, you know, whatever the problem is by pulling a lever. No, it's more about, I really need to come into a listening, a connection with my own body. And I need to be willing to microscopically change a few things and see how that affects me and track it. And so it's a greater personal responsibility, which I know you have, you know, just a ton of experience with how to assist people in moving into that, and how you've done that for yourself. And so I'm very excited about where this is going. I don't worry about the centralized system becoming broken, so to speak.
Yeah.
That's not a concern for me.
Well, in some ways it maybe need to, right? I have friends who are nurses that, you know, are choosing not to be vaccinated. Well, they're getting fired, you know, and these have been wonderful nurses and they're standing up for what their belief is. And the fact that they can't be part of the health system. Now, you know, I recognize there's many multiple points of view. I'm not taking really any sides. I'm just stating that you've got people with intent who will end up somewhere, you know, and I do see that the more, I don't know, call it Eastern approach, which is a more progressive approach of taking care of your health. It's not when you're sick, you go to a doctor. You know, you're looking after your health in all kinds of ways that we've been discussing here.
It is a total holistic approach that involves, you know, that mindfulness that we talked about, which a lot of people are more open to meditation and spiritual practices. It's really a great stack, you know, that can work for us.
Great. So we're coming up to time here, Peter. Is there any lasting words that you would like to share with our audience?
Well, I just want to say you are a shining light in my life, Mark. And I love this platform that you're working, this Amarna. And I am just really excited to see where you're going with this.
I really, really appreciate that, Peter. I appreciate you being being my guest today and sharing your experiences and wisdom with us all. So thank you very much. And like I said, there'll be that in the podcast. And if you wanted to reach out to Peter, I'll put that in the podcast notes as well if he chooses to do that. All right. Bye for now, folks.